This episode is sponsored by Macmillan Audio. This week, I'm excited to share an excerpt of Late Bloomer by Maisie Eddings, read by Ellie Gossage.
"Massive mistake," Pepper repeats, now pacing the length of the shed. "Not the nicest way to be greeted by the woman you recently agreed to hook up with, I'll admit it." She digs her hands in her pockets as she moves, puffs of white flowers spinning like tops between her active fingers when she pulls them out. My entire body sears hot as the wind pushes the scent of chamomile toward me. "Good to see you too, Pepper. How's the freakout?" I ask, blotting up the rest of the ink that landed on my desk. She shoots me a dirty look. "Great, thanks. I love a good Sunday spiral."
Start listening to Late Bloomer by Maisie Eddings now, wherever audiobooks are sold. Hello and welcome to A Bookish Home. I'm your host, librarian and writer Laura Zaro-Kopinski, and today New York Times bestselling author Stephanie Dre is here to discuss her captivating new historical novel, Becoming Madam Secretary, about Frances Perkins, one of the greatest political figures of the 20th century and an unsung heroine whose legacy is woven into the fabric of every American life. Stephanie Dre is a New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and USA Today bestselling author of historical women's fiction. Her award-winning work has been translated into many languages and tops lists for the most anticipated reads of the year. She now lives in Maryland with her husband, cats, and history books. Stephanie, thank you for being here and congratulations on becoming Madam Secretary. This was such a fascinating read. I couldn't put down about a woman that I'm ashamed to say I knew hardly anything about. And now I can't believe that the history books gloss over her the way they do. So I'm really excited to hear more about the book from you.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm delighted that you enjoyed the book. And also not surprised that you hadn't heard of Frances Perkins before, or maybe weren't as familiar with her, because she really has been neglected by the historians.
I mean, it's amazing when, you know, you find in the novel how many pieces of American history she's touched and what a significant role she played during the Great Depression. And I feel like I had memories of just a stray line in a textbook about her, and it's just, she did not get her due. And I think instead of reading even a whole chapter of a nonfiction book about her in one of those history books, I loved getting to instead kind of, you know, experience what it would have felt like to be a woman of the time trying to fight for change and being involved in all these significant events with the political leaders of the day. It was just fascinating. So I guess just to start, if you can tell listeners a little bit more about, I guess without giving away what happens in the course of her journey, but sort of like some of the things that we might not realize Frances Perkins had a hand in that we kind of take for granted today.
I'd love to, because I often say, and I stand by this, that Frances Perkins is the most important woman in American history. And I know that's a big claim, and I get skeptical eyebrows. But I will die on this hill. And I feel like when people read the book, they're going to climb up on this hill with me. Because Frances had such an outsized legacy that there aren't many men who can compete with her, much less other women in history.
Yes.
Frances, if you are just sitting in a room listening to this right now, your life is touched by her in all sorts of ways. If you look up and you see a fire sprinkler system at your workplace, you could thank Frances Perkins. If you went out to a restaurant this weekend and there were no rat droppings in your food, you can thank Frances Perkins. For that matter, if you had a weekend, you can thank Frances
Perkins.
Yes. If you or anyone you love has collected Social Security, you can thank Frances Perkins. She is a woman whose work shaped an entire American century. We are still reaping the benefits of her work today. And I'm not the first to say this, but I cannot think of a more consequential cabinet member since Alexander Hamilton.
It's fascinating. And one of the things I really liked about being kind of put in the middle of these political and policy battles is, and it's why I love reading historical fiction, I think sometimes it's taken for granted that policies that are so standard today, like Social Security, like having a, you know, 5-day work week, were considered radical and crazy at the time. And we only are able to view things in that way by really putting ourselves back in the shoes of the people doing this work at the time. And I just think it gives you a different perspective when we look at different policies today that people say can't be done. I also thought it was really interesting with her that she plays such a big role with FDR. And yet, and I'm curious why you think this is, and yet it seems like Eleanor Roosevelt, we sing the praises of and is such a well-known woman for her contributions. I'm curious why that legacy has, you know, been prominent and Frances Perkins hasn't. I mean, obviously just the general sexism of the time. Is it because Eleanor was in a more socially acceptable first lady role and Frances Perkins was more of like a working woman? Like, why do you think that she hasn't gotten the same due as her contemporary?
So I should begin by saying that, of course, I'm a huge admirer of Eleanor Roosevelt, that I think she deserves the attention that she got. She was an extraordinary first lady and public servant.
Yes, I will say too, she deserves it. But yes, do you think Frances should be up there too?
I do. And I think though that Eleanor, when I was researching, I think Eleanor actually gives the answer. She tells Frances at one point, and I did not make this up, that she had an easier time with the press and with the American public because she started out in a traditional role as the supportive wife of the husband, the president. And she's a wife and mother and quite open about that. But I think Eleanor also undercuts herself a little bit in trying to make Frances feel better about why Frances is having a harder time in her role. And I think the truth is that Eleanor was extremely gifted with the press, whereas Frances was cut from a different cloth. Frances is a buttoned-up New Englander. She did not like the prying of the press into her private life. She did not have a gift of charming them. She thought she just wanted to do her job and to be just the facts, ma'am, kind of. Mm-hmm.
Keep her head down and do the work.
Yes. And unfortunately, then and now, that never gets you far with the American public.
Yeah.
We like the personal stories. We're nosy. We want to know more. We want our public figures to entertain us to some extent, which is extremely shallow on a number of levels. But I think that this is one of the reasons why I was really happy to write the book, because I knew that Frances would disapprove of what I was doing, trying behind the curtain and exposing her private life. But I also felt that her privacy was doing a disservice to her legacy, that Americans should know everything she was struggling with in her personal life, even as she was trying to save America from the Great Depression. So I'm a little bit gratified that I, you know, I have joke all the time that Frances would hate this book, but her grandson, who I interviewed for this novel, he very kindly told me, you know, you're right, my grandmother would have taken a dim view of what you were doing, but she would have understood the importance for posterity, and so I think she'd forgive you. So Frances, forgive me.
Well, how did you get interested in her? Did you get more than the glossing over in history, or did she pique your interest doing some sort of research?
So I had, I'm going to come at this from a little bit of a backstory, which is that my family immigrated to the United States in the early 20th century. They were the immigrants that Frances was trying to help. all four of my grandparents survived the Great Depression, and they had lots of stories to tell me about trying to survive. And they all credited FDR with having saved the family and the Great Deal, the New Deal. My grandfather actually was a member of the Civilian Conservation Corps, and he was very proud of, you know, the dollar that he would get to send home. So I knew that I owed a debt of gratitude to FDR. I did not really understand the woman behind the New Deal, and that was Frances Perkins. I had heard of her. I will say that I did know she was our very first female cabinet secretary in the United States. But mostly I had only seen pictures of her where she's very dowdy looking, sort of. She looks like a very matronly, stodgy old lady. And of course, this is the impression that Frances wants to give. This is what she wants to leave us with, because she thought we would take her more seriously that way. But it had never occurred to me, you know, that this is not the real Frances, and that she had once been young. And I was doing a project. I was working on some research with my dear friend and often co-writer, Laura Kamoy, on the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire. And Frances Perkins happened to be an eyewitness to this horrible American tragedy. And I saw a picture of Frances at this time, and I was startled because she wasn't the stodgy old lady. She's got a feather plumed hat. She's a young, stylish, young, you know, dashing woman. And I started researching her and realizing what a firecracker she had been in her youth, and how she made this transition to becoming the lady in the photographs that we see now is something that I just had to understand. And I think that readers will take a lot away from it too. So I was so delighted and honored, really, that I got to bring Frances's story to light.
Yeah, those earlier chapters about her career kind of in with the settlement houses and sort of being an activist are so compelling, and definitely not what I expected her backstory was going to be either. Could you tell listeners a little bit about some of that early work and what she was like when she was younger?
Yeah. So Frances came from a revolutionary family. Her roots went back to the Revolutionary War and I think maybe even the Mayflower. The family is very proud of their patriotic roots. And Frances always felt called to serve the country. But she was a young, unmarried woman after she graduated from Mount Holyoke, which was already a rarity for women to get a college education at the time. And she didn't really feel like she had a lot of options except, you know, going into teaching or getting married. She did teach at Ferry Hall, and there was a speech that she heard. It was the inaugural speech of Theodore Roosevelt, in which he was calling upon descendants of the Founding Fathers to serve their country once again and try to save it from the evils of industrialization and unchecked monopolies, which he believed were sort of a direct threat to our democracy. Frances felt called, and she volunteered at Hull House in Chicago with Jane Addams. And that was how she got involved in the Settlement House movement. From there, she took on work in Philadelphia, where she would go undercover to bust pimps and human traffickers. And when I read this, I just couldn't believe it. I mean, this is not a stodgy old lady, right?
No.
This is pretty wild. And once they even attacked her in the street, and she fended them off with nothing but her parasol. So again, not a stodgy old lady. Frances then went to New York, where she was studying malnutrition of children in Hell's Kitchen. So she got to rub elbows with a lot of the political bosses of Tammany Hall and some very colorful New York figures at the time. And it's really when she met a lot of the people that would shape the rest of her life, including a little known lawyer at the time named Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
Well, and when he enters the scene, their relationship is also not what I expected. I mean, she doesn't think much of him at first, and they're sort of at odds when she's in New York government. And so I thought that the storyline between kind of depicting the two of them was so interesting. And their relationship and just how you go about bringing that to the page, I wondered, you know, obviously we can't be in the room with them knowing exactly what was said. So how do you keep from getting too bogged down in the small details or things you can't find, but, you know, but then kind of being able to feel confident enough to really make us believe their relationship and feel like we're in the same room with them? Like, it's something I struggle with as sort of an aspiring historical fiction writer, that confidence to sort of like take some creative license and, you know, make the best guesses that you can versus like the small details. How did you approach that with these kind of larger than life figures?
So it was really fun to begin with, to find out that Francis Perkins and FDR began with such a contentious relationship. Cause you know, they, of course they forge a great friendship that changes the country. We all know that part, but I had no idea that she really disliked him when she met him. She thought he was a huge loser. And I know this because Francis quite wonderfully left us a great public record. She did write a book called The Roosevelt I Knew, and she actually takes a lot of pleasure in talking about how unimpressive FDR was when she first met him. And that his nickname at the time was Feather Duster Roosevelt. And that she just dismissed him as a bit of fluff. Yeah. And because she wrote a whole book about her relationship with him, that made it a lot easier for me. You know, she gives a lot of anecdotes. She gives a lot of examples. And she also left 5,000 pages worth of digitized oral history.
Oh, wow.
At Columbia University. So I did not understand all of the 5,000 pages worth, but I did read them all. And when you read them, you start to get a sense for the person that you're writing about. And it's easier to fill in the blanks because you know how they reacted in maybe a different similar situation or the kind of things they said in a similar situation. So I like to use snippets of dialogue that I take directly from things that my historical characters have said or written in their letters. And there are numerous letters that I've excerpted in this book as well, so that people can get a sense of how she spoke and how she thought. It's easier in this case for me to do because Frances is the first heroine that I have had that I've written about who is modern enough that I actually was able to listen to her voice. There are some voice recordings of her speaking. And there's some films of her moving or talking or at events. And that just blew my mind. And it also made it so much easier to fill in those blanks. So I would say it's harder the longer ago you're writing about. You just sort of have to do your best to pull together clues from the primary sources that you have available to you. But in Frances, I really lucked out.
That's so interesting. And her grandson was open to speaking with you. Did he have a lot of interesting insights?
He really did. He is a lovely man. And he is very involved in keeping her legacy alive. So of course, I'm always nervous about how he'll, you know, receive the book. He hasn't written me to tell me he hates it yet. So I
bet you're in the clear then.
Yeah, I think I'm in the clear. He gave me a lot of background on his mother, which was important because Frances Perkins' relationship with her daughter was a real struggling point for her in her public service. She was really trying to juggle how to be a good wife and mother to a very struggling family while the country was on its knees and she was being told, you are the only person who can help fix this. And that's really rare in our country. And she resisted that because in a democracy, really no person should be essential. And so she did not want to believe that she was the only person who could fulfill this ambition that she had to help America reform. And Tomlin Perkins Coggeshall, that's her grandson, he gave me a lot of insight into the sacrifices that that entailed, because Frances's daughter always felt in some sense that her mother had put the country ahead of the family. And that was very sad. And I think Frances struggled with that all of her life. In fact, one of the papers that were found in her desk were some sort of questioning about her love for her family. And I think she always wondered, you know, was it worth it? And if I could go back in time and say one thing to her, I would thank her and tell her it was worth it.
Do you think in her lifetime, toward the end of her life, she felt that lasting legacy, or is it unclear from kind of the record she's left behind?
I think she always had her personal struggles or demons of thinking that maybe she should have spent more time with her husband and child. But I think she did know that she had a big legacy behind her. And I was really gratified that I get to write, you know, at the end of the book, when she's much older, she's able to look back and realize that her accomplishments are so large and so woven into the fabric of America that people completely take it for granted. Yeah. One of her students even said something like, but Miss Perkins, we've always had Social Security in this country. And that just made me laugh, and it made me wonder, you know, did she want to strangle him or laugh uproariously or pump her fist in a, you know, victory? Because that just tells you how great your legacy is when the newer generation can't imagine life without it.
Yeah, it's so taken for granted. I'm curious, because it is kind of a daunting project in a way. How long did the book take you to write and research? I would imagine it was just a big undertaking.
Yeah, I started the book in March of 2020. So the height of the pandemic, yes. And normally I would go to the sites of a person's life, you know, see their house if I could, or try to walk in their footsteps. But unfortunately, I couldn't go anywhere or do anything for quite a while, which meant that I had to sort of draft the book mostly based on biographies and the primary resources that had been digitized at Columbia University. And so it did slow me down. It took a long time before I was able to examine Frances's personal papers. So all told, I started in March 2020, and I finished probably around the same time in 2023.
Yeah, I could see that being challenging, to not be able to get where you need to get, and no way to know how long that's going to go on. And right. Yeah, challenging. So we're not fun days. I'm wondering if you can say anything about what has maybe piqued your interest as your next subject.
I'm happy to talk about that, because my dear friend Laura Kamoy and I are getting the band back together again. And our very next book is going to be about a little known founding mother named Abigail Adams.
Ooh. Oh, how fun.
Yeah, we're so excited about it. I believe it's going to be called A Founding Mother. And we're already working on it. And Abigail is tart and fun and funny. And so I just love writing about founding mothers of America, including Frances Perkins, who I consider a founding mother of the 20th century.
Oh, for sure. And for a project like that, how do you approach working on that with a co-author? You know, are you doing the research together, sharing documents, going back and forth in the same chapters? How does that work?
Our process has really differed depending on every book that we've written together. In this case, we're both juggling other projects. So, and we're also, this is going to be a dual narrative. So I suspect that it's going to be a little different this time. But traditionally, we've done it all. Sometimes we've, you know, sat next to each other in a Panera with a laptop between us, you know, typing and then pushing the laptop to the other so they could say, oh, let me show you this. And then we'll say, oh yeah, let me add that. And so we really are blessed that we have such a great working relationship and that we sort of speak the same writerly language. It's been a delight and I can't wait to work with her again.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Very interesting creative process. I meant to ask too, if there are any books that you've been enjoying just as a reader lately.
Yeah, I just finished A Frozen River by Ariel Lawn, and I love that. And I am in the midst of reading Allison Pataki's Finding Margaret Fuller. And I'm really enjoying that too, because I just love how she's portraying these literary greats where Ralph Waldo Emerson is so insufferable, but we totally understand why Margaret Fuller admires him. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I have that one queued up. I've got to add it to the top of the list. It looks so fascinating. And I can picture the cover too. It's a gorgeous cover.
Oh, yes.
Well, I really hope that listeners go pick up a copy of Becoming Madam Secretary. I also think that this would be a great sort of gateway historical novel for somebody in your life who's very into history but doesn't normally read historical fiction, because I think it just has it's just a fascinating way to look at these central, you know, policy achievements in the country and what went behind them. And it's West Wing fans, I feel like, will enjoy that whole like political battle aspect of it. So I feel like this would be a great gift for somebody in your life who you kind of want to get into historical novels. And it was just wonderful to get to learn more about this remarkable woman, Frances Perkins, and her life. So I can't recommend it highly enough. And Stephanie, it's been wonderful to get to hear more about the book from you. Best of luck with the next book. And I can't wait to read more about Abigail Adams. I'm sure that will be just as fascinating.
Thank you. And I hope you'll have me back.
I would love to.
For links to all of the books mentioned on this week's episode, you can visit abookishhome.com. If you are enjoying the show, I hope you take a minute to subscribe and also rate and review wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would encourage you to share it on social media to help other people find the show and this episode. Thanks for listening, everyone, and happy readings.